go, Scuttlebucks! Good to be with you. I'm Jeff. That is Tom. And the Bucks just keep on winning, although this one seems in the distant past as we look back at that win. Before we get started, let's mention, as we always should, because we're thankful to them, we're talking about our friends at Bill Curry Ford, who helped sponsor the Scuttlebucks, and for that, we're forever grateful. Hey, listen, maybe you're thinking about a new truck. Why wouldn't you be? Maybe you want to do something with your lease, get a new one, something along those lines. Reach out directly to Bill Curry Ford GM Sean Sullivan. He'll help you personally. You can find his email at BillCurryFord.com or just go to the Bill Curry Ford dealership 1 mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway in Tampa. Huge Bucks fans at Bill Curry Ford, serving the community, have for a long, long time. It's what they're all about. So many Bucks players and coaches are customers. That includes Vita Vea, Ali Marpet, and more. Bill Curry Ford has a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. And remember, GM Sean Sullivan will assist you personally. Ask for the Joe Bucks fan discount. BillCurryFord.com. All right, Tom, let's look back. Something that stands out here right off the bat. The superlatives continue to mount for Tom Brady. He had won the Offensive Player of the Week. By the way, the 32nd time in his career that he had done that. And then a short time later, against the Eagles, he posted a career first, and it is notable from Buccaneers.com. I take this stat. I want to give credit where credit's due. But pretty cool. 34 of 42 passes. That's just over 80%, almost 81% for 297 yards, two touchdowns. Did have the pick. It's the first time he's thrown 40-plus passes and finished the game with a completion percentage of over 80%. I'm going to like doing the Scuttlebucks even more than I already like doing the Scuttlebucks with you, buddy, if every week we are lauding new records being set by Tom Brady at this late stage of his career.
Yeah, well, I think also, you know, by the time we get into December, you're just going to see a lot of records being broken de facto, because we throw the ball a lot and there's going to be an extra game, and these per game averages keep going and going and going. It's a pleasure to watch. You know, the problem was, as Vita Vea, is doing a celebration dance. I think it was 28-7 or 28-14 at the time on Thursday night. You think the game's over. There's still plenty of game to go. And it gets a little nip and tuck. It's amazing. I feel really bad out there for the Buccaneers fans who they laid him and laughed. You know, it's 7 or 7.5 for the Bucs against the Eagles. If you could look at the matchup on paper, it was an easy cover. Those are the only Bucs fans, I would say, that went home really disappointed last Thursday would be those who lay the number. Because even 6.5 wasn't good in this particular situation. As Philadelphia lines up for the two-point conversion at 28-20 late in the game.
Inexplicably.
Hearts in throats. And then the Bucks do just enough to get inside the red zone, but not push forward.
Yeah, they decide to go ahead and kneel down. It's the one time that the old man manning the team had any idea that he could run out the clock, or that he should. We've complained about Bruce Arians' inability to understand time management his whole career. He's been especially bad at it in Tampa. Then all of a sudden he figures the exact amount of seconds, I mean, to the number, that he can kneel and get out of there without having to do anything. I, of course, sound like a man who may have had the Bucks minus 6.5. Because why wouldn't I? It's 28-7. The game is over. This is a walk in the park. Could have been 56-7. I do think there's something, as we remove the jest from the conversation, to say that they can learn from this, Tom. It's the NFL. The rules are in place for offenses to go crazy. It is awfully hard, once you take your foot off the gas, to kind of reignite that transmission again and decide to get going. So, you know, the Bucks had to convert several third downs too in the last drive in particular that were a little hairy. You could have lost this football game, is my point, by being stupid.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. It's going forward on fourth down on the other side of the 50-yard line. Listen, I'm typically an aggressive guy. You know, I don't mind going forward. The no risk it, no biscuit idea is something that I would embrace. I think it's overblown. If you look at what Bruce has done since his time began in Tampa, there are instances where you say, oh, absolutely, he lives by that credo. Like going for it on our own side of the 50-yard line on a 4th-and-1 in some key situations down the stretch last year. But if you look at it as a whole, no risk it, no biscuit is applied judiciously. He reads the room. And unfortunately, in this particular case on Thursday, he read the room poorly, because if Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia offense didn't get a 50-yard pass interference penalty, they weren't going down the field and scoring. So the only way that they could be in the game at 28-14 is if you failed on fourth down. And what was interesting to me is, you know, some of it would be the offense being disjointed, But I think Brady's thumb was bothering him by the second half of this game. It's a lot of football. Yeah. I understand that, you know, we didn't have a proper practice between the Dolphins game and the Eagles game, but I'm sure he's throwing on the side. And it looked like something was up. Now, I'm assuming because he banged the thumb in the second half of the Dolphins game, that's what it was. But there's a clear line of delineation about the end of the second quarter through the end of the game. That final throw he made to Antonio Brown to convert a third down and basically ice the game was the best throw he made in about 2.5 quarters. But you could see something was up, man. Simple throws were way off. The dynamics of the throws, the velocity of those short passes, way too hot. A couple of passes way too high, not even close, wrong shoulder. He's so good that it's so easy to criticize Brady. But I think in this case, there was some fatigue going on with his throwing hand, and we did just enough to get by. But all the more reason in that fourth down situation to probably just punt the ball there. What's also also interesting about that play, too, is I believe O.J. Howard was the target. Wasn't even close.
Terrible call. He's triple covered. Well, I don't know what he's throwing into.
They could have tackled him, and it wouldn't have been P.I. because it's an uncatchable ball. On the top of the TV screen as you're watching, Mike Evans is wide the hell open there. So they do have an open read. It's just it seemed Brady was affected by the malaise of the second half. It could have just been mental, but I think a little bit of it was physical, too.
One, I would have punted, and I am aggressive like you are, but I don't believe the Jalen Hurts and the Eagles have shown any ability to sustain drives, let alone multiple drives, so I'm not going to make it easy on them. Two, if I'm running that play, and I'm sure that you know Brady would probably take some responsibility here. I don't know who his primary was, but if you're running a fourth down play that far on the wide side of the field to a tight end that you got to drop into a bucket covered by three guys, that can't be the throw. That can't be the play. I just a really strange – everything about it looked disjointed and convoluted. I will say this. I like that Brady – continues to amaze me out of the pocket in the last 2 weeks. The throw you're talking about where he's rolling to his right is a laser. He's an old man. That's a difficult play, and he has to wait for something to come open, and it's not that open. He just fits it in. It's just a big throw.
Yeah, there was another throw on Thursday. It reminded me, I think we just had this discussion recently, too, about the Thursday night football game in Tampa, where it was the Patriots come to town. And we remember Dirk Cutter dialed up a play down the stretch. It was an easy read to O.J. Howard up the seam, and the Bucs might have walked off with a win at home. But we marveled in the moment. We were doing the Scuttlebucks at the time, and it was sponsored by Bill Curry Ford at the time. So consistent sponsorship out of our pal Sean Sullivan. But we marveled at how quick Brady was getting through his progressions and how, like, you see the Dak Prescott pregame warm-up thing where he does, like, he looks like he's doing the cha-cha
the
or something. Right, the hip motion. That Brady's swivel was faster than it was in the 2000s. He made another throw or two on Thursday night where I'm going, oh my God, this guy, he is Benjamin Button. So like for all the criticisms, and I get it, I know that there are a lot of positive only Bucks fans out there. You can have a dynamic conversation, positive and negative. When you're this good and the standard is Super Bowl or bust, you should be nitpicky. That's the whole point. That's the whole point of getting to this place. But there's no doubt that when you see some of the things that Brady does, even still, at this late stage of his life and his football career, man, he does them better now than he did when he was 25, 26 years old, and that includes pocket presence, and that includes his ability to get from one read off of that read to number two, number three, and number four.
Yeah, let's go easy on that late stage of life comment, given that I'm older than Tom Brady, sir. I would just say that Brady and the Bucks are fun to talk about because we have to nitpick. So when we do get into these criticisms, it's not like, hey, we feel negatively about where the franchise is at or where Brady's at or anything like that. It's just that you can't be all, you know, roses every time we get on here because we are talking solely about the idea that this is Super Bowl or bust, as Tom just, you know, pointed out, and I'm reiterating. That's the lofty place the franchise finds itself in. And for one, that was the laughingstock of football for the better part of its existence. It's a cool, heady place to be. And you should just embrace the idea that we're chasing perfection. We're chasing, and I'm not talking about record perfection. Obviously, that's lost with the Rams game, but it's also unreasonable in a 17-game season anymore. But moreover, we're just talking about trying to win back-to-back Super Bowls and to do something that this franchise, and frankly, fans of this franchise, as we have been our whole life, never really thought we'd be in discussion with. So it's a different kind of week-to-week evaluation. It is is nitpicky by definition. It has to be. I would also say I rather enjoy during these discussions, Tom, right now, as the Bucks continue to just stockpile wins. I like, oddly, being somewhat, I understand they're still a national story, and as long as Tom Brady's there and as long as they're winning double-digit games and in the hunt for a one seed and all that, they're going to be a huge story. But doesn't it feel like the Bucks are annoying to people and to the extent that they're desperate to see somebody else? So, therefore, it's happened already rather quickly. Is Mahomes and the Chiefs, are they good enough on offense to overcome a terrible defense? Is Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills ready to take the next step? Lamar Jackson throwing better and better out of the pocket. Is Baltimore, despite all their injuries, are they able to win now with him between the seams? In the NFC, are the Rams the new number one team to beat? Is Aaron Rodgers on his one final run in Green Bay trying to get back and host another NFC championship game for the right to go to the Super Bowl? Like, these are storylines that are consistently talked about NFL coverage wise, and then the Bucks are down here at 7 or 8. Yeah. I love it. That's fine. I think the Rams game gave us a gift,
yeah,
which is to not be center cut and allow all these people to vie for position. Meanwhile, you just keep winning games that you're heavily favored to win, and the next thing you know, you're going to look up and the Bucks are going to be 9-1.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's when the narrative will switch back to Tampa. For now, I think for two reasons, we are persona non grata. And I don't even mean that in the way that people are rooting against us. I'm just saying the Rams result, yes, that's part of it. The other part is we're set it and forget it. We've gone from a franchise that can't win 9 games to don't worry about them. They're going to be there. Let's talk about these other teams where there are some moving parts. There aren't moving parts in Tampa. Everybody came back. Now, you could talk about health. Sure, that's going to affect things. And we can't know. And we can't know what the health of the team is going to be in 8 weeks' time. You know, that's just, that's something that is going to have to play out before our eyes. The good thing I like, and I mentioned this before, is while you're going through all of this attrition week to week, and I saw the report on JoeBucksFan.com that Lavonte David may already be back this weekend against the Bears. Gronk obviously was close, and then he wasn't for the Eagles game last week. Take your time, because you're getting valuable snaps. You're getting valuable exposure for all these other players. Richard Sherman, is he going to be the Alfred Hitchcock cameo in the season, or is he going to be back and able to play in a month or so, 6 weeks, whatever it is? I think he might be. But again, you want to get as many players exposure in this offense, on this defense, as possible as you get into January, because if somebody goes down in the third quarter because they tweak a hammy, then you've got a replacement there who's ready to go. I've got the stats up in front of me for Ross Cockrell. If you look at the last month, he's been one of our better cover corners across the board. Like, even when Carlton Davis was healthy earlier in the season, if you compare the last month of what 43 has done for the defense, it's been largely positive. So I like these storylines because, rightfully speaking, he should be option 4 or 5 if we're going empty. If our opponent's going empty and we've got 6 defensive backs or 7 defensive backs on the field in the playoffs, he's going to be out there only in that situation. Well, the good news is he's playing freaking well. That's what I love about what's going on right now, is we're finding a way to win. Those short week Thursday night games are always ugly. Even though we were blowing them out, it's just inevitable. There's something's going to go wrong in that particular setting because you don't practice leading into that game. Build your depth, and we are building our depth. That's what gets me excited.
Yeah, by the way, I texted you during this game, and I know it's the story this week on all the sites that cover the Bucks, but I continue to get excited about the buy-in and growth and overall physicality that he's running with in Leonard Fournette. And, you know, he's clearly now the number one on this team, Tom, and is the guy moving forward, I would think. They're shopping Ronald Jones is what it looks like. That's interesting to me. But it may be that he is expendable at this point. I just love that one of those two guys, I don't really care if it's Jones or Fournette. I just wanted somebody to emerge as a guy that was dependable. Either one of them would work, or both would be nice, but it hasn't been that way. It's been one or the other so far in their tandem, where that one's playing really well while the other isn't, and then that other guy gets the opportunity. Fournette has really sustained the longest stretch of good play at the running back position that we've had in some time. And again, he runs with power, and he's catching the ball consistently out of the backfield, which is something that I'm not sure we thought he was going to do. So that storyline continues to grow, that he's the guy, and we'll see if they shop Ronald Jones. You saw they let go of Jaden Mickens, so that the fourth-round pick, the kid whose name is escaping me right now at receiver, is going to be the return guy replacing him. So Okay. No real surprise there. They also activated a guard off the practice squad. Yeah. So, you know, Bucks just making little minor moves right now during the weeks.
Yeah, Mickens is close to fumbling a couple of those returns. I think that might be something to do with the decision there. Obviously, I believe also the practice squad signed another corner because we can't have enough of them right now. They're dropping like flies.
A guy from the Raiders.
Yeah, the Fournette situation is really interesting to me because even in the playoffs and playoff Lenny, yada, yada, that got a lot of national run, I didn't think he was markedly better than Ronald Jones on the road to the Super Bowl. He made more splash plays. There is no doubt about that. The run in Green Bay, particularly, is the one that stands out where you go.
Also, Tom, the underrated play is the fourth down catch.
Yep, the fourth down catch just before halftime that set up the Scotty Miller
bomb. That's an amazing catch.
Yes, it is. But I didn't think that there was a huge difference when those guys were out on the field. In fact, if I needed a yard, I trusted Ronald Jones last year more until maybe the Super Bowl, and that changed a little bit. Now, this year, it's only continued to where if Fournette is not on this roster, you feel like you've lost something. And last year it was, well, if Rojo's hot, if Fournette's hot, whatever. The one thing I'd say, though, is I hope they don't shop Ronald Jones because I still think he's a good player. He's in the doghouse for a lot of reasons, and he's earned his place in the doghouse. A lot of key situations that piss Bruce Arians off.
You can't miss pass pro. You piss Tom Brady off, and that's that.
Exactly right. But what I tell you is, okay, let's say you shop Ronald Jones and you get some salary cap relief or something that you make a move, and Fournette goes down in a month. Like, where are you?
You don't feel good.
No, because then Gio Bernard's your guy? Like, nah, man. And the free agent market, obviously, you know, Baltimore's had like 74 different running backs this season. So it's really thin, that market. I don't know how many options. Lamar Miller just got signed to, was it the Saints practice squad? I mean, that's how thin the open market is. I would keep these two as an insurance policy because I think Rojo can still be that type of back who you can give it to 15 to 20 times if the game plan calls for it, and it'll get you 100 yards and it'll run hard. The thing is that Fournette has just gone to another level. There's no arguing it now. His hands are soft, which is great because Brady loves to throw those little checkdowns. He finishes every single play with thunder. You hardly see him get pushed back. It's a pleasure to watch him, and I think he's putting himself in position to make a lot of money next year, not from us, but from somebody else.
You mentioned it before, and just to put a ribbon on it, the cornerback the Bucks brought in is Bleedy Ray Wilson.
He's
the guy from I'm probably mispronouncing his name, and I apologize to him. He's former Raider. He has a ton of experience in the league.
He's a kid out of UConn.
Yeah. And you wouldn't expect, like, listen, he's not a guy that has had a great career, but the fact that he's been around the league for as long as he has, he's played in 75 games in his NFL career, by the way. And he started 17 of them. So, look, he's a guy who didn't play much for the Falcons the last he was out there, but he did have 3 interceptions. So he's, you know, who knows? He's a guy who's got a ton of game experience. It's always good to add that to your roster when you're as banged up as we are. So I'm sure that's why they made that move there. And then, like you said, we don't know Richard Sherman maybe a month from now. We'll see. Trying to play through a hamstring is not easy, especially at his age.
Yeah, it's also good to know that, you know, Jamel Dean has been back. We didn't talk about that last week at all, but that he was activated for the Dolphins game, and he's back in the fold. He's playing well. You know, I think he might have gotten roasted a couple of times on Thursday, but the officials allowed for a defensive pass interference on Thursday Night Football the way that it was back in 1995. I mean, both ways. There was a lot of jostling going on. I think the refs were like, you know what, we're tired too. Let's just get through this game as quickly as possible. So I don't know if that would affect what we think of Jamel Dean's performance had more flags been thrown. But it's good to see that he's back out there. Obviously, Murphy Bunting, I don't know if we're ever going to get him back this season. But, to reiterate that conversation, you know, we've had a lot of guys go down in the secondary, Antoine Winfield included at safety. Jordan Whitehead missed the first couple of weeks. As long as you keep getting options, keeping options out there and available for the end of the season, it should pay off. And maybe this guy, Ray Wilson, is just the next one in line.
Hey, Tom, let's do this thing here where we predict, I guess, name the Bucks' next loss. Ready? I got the schedule in front of me.
Ooh, all right.
All right, so we got the Bears, obviously, coming up 4:25 on Sunday. We've got on the road at the Saints before you go into a bye at the end of the month here. So
what's interesting on that Saints game real quick is they play Monday night, so you're actually getting the advantage there a little bit. They're coming off of a bye week. They were off this past weekend, but they go Monday, Sunday. So that's actually a nice little advantage there.
And they're not playing all that well. So it's not like I'm sitting around really worried about the Saints all that much. You could lose it. You could lose to any NFL team if you don't play well. We know that. But no, on paper, if the Bucs are reasonably healthy and locked in, they should win both these next two games, Bears and Saints. Then they get the bye week. They get to rest up. They come out after that against Washington in Washington. That defense has not been the same in Washington this year at all. Not even close. It's really strange. They're not well quarterbacked. I'm not going to pick that game. For whatever reason, we always struggle against the Giants, but that game's at Raymond James in late November. I'm not picking that game. The Colts are beat to hell the following week on the 28th of November. Then you're at the Falcons. They're not any good. Is it week 14, Tom? Are we going to go all the way to week 14 when the Bucs host the Buffalo Bills?
I think the Atlanta game could be a little bit problematic because that offense is explosive when it's healthy, and it might be healthy by that point in the season. They played us really tough down in Tampa. Again, trying to predict a win when you're looking at our roster in a vacuum against all of these rosters. I mean, even Buffalo last night, they were run all over by Tennessee. And you know what? The indications, if you look at the metrics on Buffalo's run defense, it's vulnerable, so you can get them. I mean, there's no way that we went out. Is there? Because if let's just say that you get by Buffalo, the rest of your schedule is New Orleans, Carolina, the Jets, and Carolina.
Yeah, you're going to win those games. So, I don't think the Bucs are going to go 16-1. But, buddy, I do think 14-3 feels pretty possible. Like, it doesn't feel as if we're stretching through the realms of fandom, right? Just to say 15-2 or 14-3. Like, if I say that legitimately, I don't think I sound crazy.
Well, and you look at where these games are taking place, too. Like, if, for example, on December the 12th, the game was at Buffalo, you'd feel differently about it.
Yeah, sure, you'd pick Buffalo.
If, for example, you switched the Washington and Jets games and it was in D.C. on January the 2nd, maybe that would be a little bit more dangerous because maybe. Who knows if Washington's got it together at that point. And if it's you know what the weather usually is like when they host a playoff game. Typically, it's crap, and the field is a complete mud pit, you know. So that would be a moment where I'd say, we're better than them, but the situation says that we could lose it. All of these games are taking place at the right locations at the right time on the schedule.
And even the ones that aren't, like January the 2nd against the Jets in New York.
It's the Jets.
The Jets. Yeah, who cares? Oh, boy, we got to go to MetLife. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find a lot of losses, and yet I know they're coming because it's the National Football League and upsets happen all the time and not guys get banged up and whatever, but it's – yeah, there may be a shocker in there somewhere. They may lay an egg in there somewhere. Those are impossible to predict. I mean, after all, our next foe was one of those games just a year ago against the Bears where the Bucs just played terribly and lost a game somewhat inexplicably and then obviously went on a hell of a run afterwards. But it's just on paper. Again, the Bucs will be favored starting – okay, so obviously you go back and look at it. We couldn't remember. You and I couldn't remember anyhow. Whether or not at kickoff the Rams had moved to a 1-point favorite or the Bucs were a 1-point favorite, but it was somewhere in the pick'em area, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Bucs were heavily favored against the Patriots, obviously heavily favored against the Dolphins, heavily favored against the Eagles. They're favored big this week against the Bears. They'll be favored at New Orleans. They'll be favored at Washington. They'll be favored at home against the Giants. They'll be favored on the road against the Colts. They'll be favored at Atlanta. The chance they have, perhaps, to be an underdog at home, maybe against Buffalo, maybe.
No, but we'd have to lose games between now and then for that to be a reality. And we're talking, it's almost self-fulfilling that, you know, if you're going to beat up on this part of the schedule, then there's no way at that record that Vegas can, in their right mind, favor Buffalo.
So then there you go. You'd have that, and then the Bucs will be favored against the Saints. They'll be favored against the Panthers and the Jets and the Panthers. Basically, what I'm getting at, fans, is that the Bucs are going to be favored in every single game they play from here on out.
Yeah, I think what's
again, unless they stumble, they could be underdogs to the Bills.
And that's, I mean, so yeah, 16 out of your 17 games you're a favorite in as a Buc fan. That's just
these are heady times.
They
heady
are
times.
The sequence of the schedule that I look at very carefully is Buffalo, New Orleans, Carolina, and that's in December. The reason is not just because Buffalo is a good football team, but if you're looking at the standings, wild card implications, things like that, New Orleans and Carolina could be playing for their playoff lives in those particular spots. And who knows? Maybe we're letting some guys lay back in the cut a little bit because we're playing for January.
Sure.
So what I did to answer your question was go and look at the Arizona Cardinals schedule. That's what I did because I want to know if there is empire building going on and the Cardinals are the lone remaining undefeated team in the NFC at the present moment, what's the rest of their schedule like? And because remember last year we had this conversation and Green Bay's schedule was, I mean, ridiculously easy. We knew that they were going to be the number one overall seed as long as Rodgers didn't get hurt or Devontae Adams went down or something crazy like that. Well, Arizona's got an interesting sequence. On Sunday, they're playing Houston, so that's a win. But then they turn around. A week from Thursday, they play Green Bay. That's a really big Thursday night football game for the NFC implications.
Is that in Green Bay?
It is in Arizona.
Should be a fun game, man. I can't wait to watch that game.
Yeah, a rare Thursday night football game. You're like, ooh, that's must see.
Yeah.
Arizona should be relatively fresh for that one, too, because, you know, they're not going to focus on Houston this week that much. You go through the motions and you go get that win. They've got San Francisco on the road after that. Dangerous spot. Carolina, Seattle. That's their bye week. Then they play at Chicago. Meh. The Rams. That's a losable game. At Detroit.
Well, yeah.
No. Versus Indy. No. But their final 2 weeks are at Dallas. Really interesting football game. That's week 17. Cardinals-Cowboys on January the 2nd, and then they host the Seahawks to close out the season, presumably with Russell Wilson at that point.
So yeah, you're looking but the at, Seahawks season will be over by then.
Unless Arizona really stumbles, you're looking at maybe three or four losses, four at most. So that's what you're trying to beat. Yeah. When you're pacing yourself and you're taking a look at the Bucs schedule in December and saying, what are our motivations for Buffalo, New Orleans, Carolina, Jets, Carolina? I think we still may be motivated enough there to play it honest.
Well, and I think it's going to be fascinating because you're talking about an NFC that's pretty well stacked because Cardinals-Rams, Tom, is a war with the next time they play. Remember, the Cardinals already beat the Rams, so the Rams will be out for blood, and that's for a division. So there you go. Those two will be going to war. Packers are obviously trying to secure home field throughout. They're a team that has won five straight after getting blown out early in the year against the Saints on opening day, actually. So they're rolling at 5-1. The Cowboys have just the one loss to us. They're 5-1, and yet they play Arizona, as you noted. Their division's garbage, though. Washington won't be there. The Eagles won't be there. The Giants won't be there. So they're going to get fat within the division. It'd be fascinating. And then for the Bucs, obviously, I could also argue that our division is bad. We just went through the schedule and said we're going to be favored in every game but one, possibly. It is fascinating. All these teams, my point would be, all these teams are going to have to keep their foot on the gas because they're competing, obviously, for that home field and that bye. So those teams are the Bucs, the Cowboys, the Packers, the Cardinals, the Rams. I don't think anybody's going to take a week off.
Yeah, one of the key reasons that we got to the Super Bowl last year is coming back and playing for the Packers in a few weeks. David Bakhtiari has started the three-week clock before he is active again, and they need him. I'm looking at their schedule. Thankfully, they're actually playing teams that are good, unlike last season. They got the Cardinals. The following week, they play at Kansas City, at probably a desperate spot for Mahomes and the Chiefs. They still have to play the Rams. They play that game at home. They play at Baltimore in the middle of December. They host Cleveland the very next week, and Cleveland will probably be playing for a lot because they don't look very good right now. They're going to be in that wild card hunt. And then the second to last week, they play Minnesota at home, and that game with the Minnesota offense is dangerous enough. So Green Bay at least plays reasonably talented teams between now and the end of the year. It looks like the race is to probably 14 wins to go get that bye week.
That's the number I would have thrown out there too, Tom. That's how I was going to put a ribbon on it since we had a long look back. I mean, it's been a long time since we played the Eagles, and we have just the Bears moving forward and time to talk about that later in the week. So, yeah, man, it's kind of a fun little exercise. I just thought you'd enjoy the fact that when I took a glance at the schedule this morning, I thought the Bucs won't be an underdog in a single game. I just thought that's crazy. I mean, maybe the Bills. I gave maybe the Bills, but that's just nuts.
I would love to go to that game.
Yeah. Wrap yourself under that that blanket of joy, Buck fans, that we're a franchise that, just casually speaking, will not be an underdog in any game they play.
I think that's the one that we got to pull our connection strings, man. Go down there to watch the Buffalo game. That should be an absolute blast. You imagine that tailgate scene with the shadiness of our market plus the Bills Mafia coming down?
Buddy. Yeah, the arrests will be at an all-time high there. I got to tell you, I just wish so much so that the Bucks could break out the creamsicles this year. They did it against the Bills, and the Bills already basically wear their throwbacks, which I love.
Yeah,
Bills, Bucks on that field, how beautiful a sight is that?
Yeah.
It's just already good, though, because the Bucks uniforms currently are great, but, man, wouldn't that be something?
Eat the fine. Just eat the fine for it. What are they going to do? What are they? Remember when USC and UCLA both wore their dark colored jerseys?
Yeah, which was awesome.
They got offsetting on sportsmanlike penalties. They're like, okay, whatever, no problem.
Hey, don't forget, go buy Bill Curry Ford, the dealership that has been helping the local community there in Tampa for 60 plus years and who have all the best deals on a new Ford truck for you. Check out their leases as well. And talk to Sean Sullivan. He'll help you personally as the ad goes. And we want to thank them. We want to thank JoeBucksFan.com and the podcast network there. And all of you guys, as always, we'll be back with you later in the week. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Go Bucks. And thanks for listening.